Anyone else? Okay, today we're going to talk to you about nutrition. And every time I bring up this topic, whenever we have guests at the guest house and we start talking about nutrition, I see people's eyes glaze over on me. You know, like, oh boy, here we go. We got a big scientific talk going on. It's going to last forever. And it's becoming more and more complicated every day. And when we think of nutrition, it used to be just some simple vitamins and minerals, and then we got antioxidants, and next thing you know, we got phytochemicals, and then we got, oh boy, it's gotten complicated. Hopefully this morning, we go over this topic, we can keep it simple, and we're going to go shopping. And so, you don't you like to shop? We're going to go shopping. You've got enough information that I gave you already that we can go shopping, so we can begin to understand what's really being said here about nutrition. The first thing, where do you get your food? Where do you buy your food? Grocery store. So most of us get our food from the grocery store. That's where it comes from. When you go to buy food, what's your favorite food to buy? Fruit and vegetables. Good. I always like it at a health talk. People say things like fruit, vegetables, and broccoli, things like that. And I have to say to them, well, you didn't get that big eating broccoli. What do you like to buy? What's your favorite? What do you like to go out and purchase? Anybody? What's that? Specialty breads. There we go. That's a nice one. Specialty breads. When you fill your basket up and you push it down to the checkout counter, what's at the checkout counter? What do they have there? Candies. Last minute incidentals, things that you might have forgot, like chewing gum and chocolate bars. And what else? There's something else. It's decorating all around there. What do they have?
Magazines.
Don't they have magazines? What do the magazines say? How to get slim. Exactly. This lady right here. How to lose weight. Isn't that right? The magazines say right up front, they tell you how to lose 20 pounds, how to lose 30 pounds, how to get 10 pounds off in 3 weeks, how to do this. And on the same cover of the same magazine, what does it say? Your grandma's favorite ribs recipe. Grandma's favorite three-layer chocolate cake. Right? How to lose weight? How to make cake. On the same magazine. If you took the magazine home and you actually looked at the articles, they all are very similar. I've read many of these articles on how to lose weight because it's part of our field. And they all say similar thing, and they all have their magic formula of carbohydrates, proteins, and fat. Did you know that? They all have their magic formula. This is what you should eat. So many carbohydrates, so many proteins, so many fats. And that's what they camp on. That's where they stay. Why do they stay there? Why is that so important? You see, there's three macronutrients. When we say macro, what do we mean? What does macro mean? What does micro mean? Macro means big. Micro means small. There's only three macronutrients, only three: carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. There are numerous micronutrients, all kinds of micronutrients. In fact, as we don't even know yet all of them, they're still discovering micronutrients. We've heard of end oils and flavones and lectins, and the latest one, not latest, but the last few years, you hear about a thing called lycopene. Lycopene. Never heard of that before. Now we got lycopene. Now we've heard of that. These are all new nutrients, but there's only three macronutrients. And those are the ones that we want to talk about. What we're doing in our country is we're eating our macronutrients from sources that are incorrect, and then we're going around and spending all kinds of money trying to buy micronutrients to make up for it. Are you with me? This is what we're doing. We're eating our macronutrients, and I'm going to show you how that happens when we go shopping. We're going to show you where we actually end up buying our calories. If we take a look, if we wanted to make food, what would we need? We have on the board here, what do we need if we wanted to make food? There's a lot of people here that we're in a farming province, and so there's a lot of people here that are farming. What do you have to make food? You have to have soil. Good. What else? You have to have air. You have to have something else. Sunlight and water. These are the things that you have to do to have. You have to have these basics. If you don't have any sunlight, you've got snow, you don't make food. If you don't have any water, you got a desert, you don't make food, right? If you don't have any soil, you don't make food. If you don't have any water, or if you don't have any air, you don't make food. These are the things. If we have only these things, if we have just soil, we put it in a pail, mix it with water, put it out in the air and sunlight, what do we have? Take soil. We used to do this when we were kids. takes soil, mix it with water, make a little mud pie out of it, right? Bake it in the sunlight. If you ate mud pies, would you get any nutrition? If you ate mud, would you be able to live? No, you wouldn't. You have to have something. What do we have to have? What's missing? If we just have mud, we don't have nutrition. What do we have to have? What is it that gives us nutrition? What's the thing that was lacking? You have to have what? You have to have plants, exactly. What is it that's so special about plants? Plants have in them what? They have in them that green stuff we call chlorophyll. And when the sunlight hits the chlorophyll through a process called, remember grade 5 science, it was called photosynthesis. Remember that? That's where all of this world's carbohydrates, proteins, and fats are produced, is in the green leaf of a plant. Isn't that right? All of the world's carbohydrates, proteins, and fats originally come from the green leaf of a plant. Isn't that right? I've had people tell me, you know what, if you just eat plants, and get this look on their face, they're going to like, if you just eat plants, you're going to be missing something. Oh, okay. There's water in plants too. But if you take a look, in the green leaf of a plant is where all of the carbohydrates, proteins, and fats on this planet come from. That's where they originate. They all originate. You know, can a fish make carbohydrates, proteins, and fats? Can he? Can a cow? Can a horse? Can any animal make them? They can't eat dirt and live. They have to eat plants. So originally, all of our food originally came from plants. Now, here's the question. How much of our Western diet then comes from plants? If we take a look at our Western diet and we break it down, you'll see the way it's broken down is 12% of our calories comes from legumes, nuts, seeds, vegetables, that type of thing, and fruits, 12%. 19% comes from grains, 17% comes from sugar, 17% comes from free fats and oils, 15% comes from dairy products and eggs, and 20% comes from meat, poultry, and fish. Directly from plants. How much of our food comes directly from plants? About 65%. But it says here, grain. When we say grain, what are the different ways we could buy grain? Ladies, if you went to town, you went to your store, what are some of the ways you can buy grain? Crackers, bread, cereal, porridge, anything else? Cookies, cakes, pastas, ravioli, macaroni, spaghetti, pizza dough, cake mix. Tim Hortons. You know, there's lots of ways to eat grain, right? 97% of the grain that's sold in Canada is refined. 97% of all the grain that we sell in Canada is refined. When we refine it, what do we take out? What do we remove? When we take that grain and we refine it, what do we take out? Take out the bran. Now, what does the bran is on the outside of the kernel. What is the bran doing for that kernel? What's its job? Protect it from... What's it protecting from? From air. That's right. That bran, inside the wheat, there's a little thing called wheat germ, right? And in that wheat germ, there's a little particle of wheat germ oil. And if that oil becomes exposed to oxygen, it oxidizes. And that it destroys it, turns it rancid. And so the bran actually protects that kernel from oxidation, stops it from oxygen. I've heard... I have only been hearsay, but I've heard they found kernels of wheat in the pyramids, taken and planted them, and they've actually sprouted. Now, this is thousands of years they've sat there. That bran did a pretty good job, don't you think? Protecting it from oxidizing. Now, at the same time, underneath the bran, the designer, the creator, put something right underneath the bran. What do you think he put? He put a paint, which we call an anti, guess what? Anti, what would you call it? An antioxidant. Right underneath the bran, there's a layer of antioxidant. And what we do, when we strip the bran off, we take away the antioxidant. Somebody phones me up, Phil, come on over to our place. What's up? We're having a party. I love parties. What's the party all about? Well, there's this friend of ours that he's gotten into this company. And the man that owns the company... He paddled up the Amazon River right up to the very headwaters of the Amazon and crawled through the forest until he found a tree. And on that tree, there's a leaf that has more antioxidants than any other plant on this planet. And out of that leaf, they've now made a juice. They put it in a bottle for $40 a bottle. If you sign up tonight, you can get it for $30. Anybody heard about this? Anybody not heard about this? You haven't heard about all these juices that you can buy that got really concentrated sources of antioxidants in them, and you can drink them and for $40 a month if you want, if you can afford it, you can take. Why are we doing this? Because we take our 97% of our grain, we have refined it, and we're consuming it that way. The next one is sugar. It says 17% of our calories come from sugar. Now, how many teaspoons of sugar do you think we consume in Canada per every man, woman, and child per day? Teaspoons per day. Give me a guess. Anybody here might guess it. What do you think? How many teaspoons per day do you think we're consuming in Canada? Help me out. Give me a guess. 25. Good guess. One can of pop has between 9 to 12 teaspoons. All right? Now we're getting there. 42. On average, every man, woman, and child in Canada, we have an average consumption of 42 teaspoons a day. 42. What I do is I measure it into a pint jar and show people what 42 teaspoons of sugar look like. Now, 42 teaspoons of sugar represents over 90 feet of sugar cane. Now, you remember what we said originally? Food comes from what? It comes from plants. Here I took a plant, I took 90 feet of a plant, and I boiled it. Then I took it and put it in a centrifuge, and I spun it, and I spun out what we call the crystalline carbohydrate. No protein, no vitamins, no minerals, no antioxidants, just straight carbohydrate. And I take 42 teaspoons of that every day, and my body goes like, what? To metabolize that, to actually utilize it, it requires vitamins and minerals. To actually make use of it, to make anything out of it, I have to have something that will help the body make use of it. But I took that all away. All right, so 40. Now I've had people tell me, you know, that may be true of most people. We, in our home, I've had lots of my guests tell us, we don't even have the sugar bowl on the table. We don't believe in having sugar on the table. We don't use sugar. And I tell them, well, do you eat all bran? All bran is 21% sugar. Ketchup is 30% sugar. If you're eating, I went to the largest granola maker in British Columbia, and I went to his factory, and when I went in the factory, I smelled the smell that brought back my childhood, and I said, what's that smell? I said, that smell is just, I can remember that from when I was a child. You know what he told me? He says, that's brown sugar. Then he said this, he said, don't let anybody kid you, the more brown sugar I put in my food, the granola, the more granola I sell. So if you're eating food that's pre-prepared in any way, you're eating sugar that's put in by the manufacturer, see? So many people, 72% of the sugar we consume every day in our diet is added by the manufacturer. It's not something that we sprinkled on our food or put in our coffee or whatever it is like that. It's been added ahead of time by the manufacturer. Okay, what about free fats? What are free fats? It says here 17% of our calories come to us from free fats. What are free fats? How many of you, do you have Costco? You must in Alberta have Costco. Do you have Costco? Do they give away samples? Have you ever had a sample at Costco? Wow, there you go. Free. They're free, right? You go there and you have a sample. It's lunchtime. Oh, you have a sample. Oh, that wasn't bad. So you take your cart and go around again and you get another sample, right? That was really good. Now, if I just give my hair a little toss and take my jacket off, maybe they won't recognize me, and I get a third one, and then I got a free lunch. Now, don't put up your hand. I know some of you tried that. Is that what we call free fat? Well, it's free food. Dr. Budwig called free fat, she said that free fat is actually unprotected fat. This is fats that come without being protected, because in nature, fat always comes with antioxidants, with fiber, with starches, with things that control how much we consume and protect us from overconsumption. That's what they really do. I mean, if you take corn oil, let's say we just took a look at corn oil, to make one tablespoon of corn oil is 12 to 14 ears of corn. 12 to 14 ears of corn to make one tablespoon of corn oil. Now, my wife and I, if we want to have a video on Saturday night, we could get together some flour and some chocolate chips and some corn oil and make together some chocolate chip cookies and maybe put in a quarter of a cup of corn oil in that batch of chocolate. The two of us consume that batch of chocolate we'd consume the equivalent of a whole bushel of corn between the two of us, you know, or a couple of bushels of corn, right? That's a lot of oil. Now, you see what's going on here? All right. Yes, sir. There you go. That's it. Tablespoon of corn oil. There we are. So there we are. You see, see what's going on. Now, I want us to go back up and look at what we just talked about. 19% of our calories come to us from grain. 97% of that's refined. 17% comes from free fat. 17% comes from sugar. If we added those three together, just add those three together, what do you got? 19 and 17 and 17 is what? 17 and 17 is 54, right? Is that right? 54. 54% of the calories in our Canadian diet, maybe not yours, but in the Canadian diet, comes to us from what we call refined foods. Foods in which we've taken out the vitamins, the minerals, the antioxidants, the phytochemicals, the fiber. It's what we call refined. 54%. I have had people come up to me after our class, and we go out in the community quite a bit, and I'll have people come up to me and they'll say to me, you know what, Phil? We don't eat any more red meat. They get really excited. Our family does not eat any more red meat. We stop eating red meat. And I'm supposed to get excited. You know, oh, wow. I don't get excited about what people don't eat. I get excited about what they do eat. Can you imagine if you invited me over and said, you know what, we're not going to have any oatmeal. Well, what are you going to have? I mean, I know you're not going to eat oatmeal, but maybe you're going to have something I don't, you know, see. I want to know what you are eating. Well, we eat Twinkies and Ding Dongs and Deli Bars and Jujubes and Almond Roca, but we don't eat red meat. What do cows eat every day? Greens. They're eating salad. There they are. They munch up another bowl of salad, and then they have another bowl of salad, and then they have another bowl. They're eating greens again. There they are out there munching away on the greens. I'm not going to eat cows. There's no way. I'm going to eat Twinkies. Are you with me? If we are not going to eat cows, we have reasons for not doing that, but if we aren't going to eat, somebody in this chain, in my food chain, has got to eat the plants. Are you with me? If somebody, either me or somebody, has got to eat the plants. If it's not me, I better eat an animal that's eating the plants. I've got to eat something. The way food comes to us is through plants. And if we're going to take most 54% of our calories to a factory and take out the plant and just give us a very small portion of that plant, we are going to have health problems. The first place to start, if you're making a change in your diet, is to eat more whole grains. First step, eat more whole grains. Second step, what would you eat instead of all that sugar? What could you eat instead? Fruit. Exactly. This is a natural sugar. This is absolutely fat. This is a natural sugar. Eat more fruit. My daughter was taking, she was taking a course in massage. It was a college course. And in that college course, they had a nutrition segment. She walked through the door with her textbook on nutrition, and who do you think grabbed it? The minute she walked through the door, I got the textbook. I want to read what's the latest and greatest on nutrition that they're teaching to the university students today on nutrition. First chapter, 45% of Americans claim they eat no fruit. 45% of Americans claim that they eat how much? No fruit. Zero. None. We had a fellow that used to come to our guest house all the time that owned 9,000 fruit trees. And he told me that at his fruit trees, what he does is he would go to the place where they're crushing rock, when they're trying to, you know, break up rock, and they would have all this rock dust laying on all on top of all the equipment. He would dust off that, he would ask them, and he would dust off all that rock dust. He would take it back to his orchard, and he would sprinkle that rock dust around the base of his trees. He said, what trees need more than anything else is minerals. When you're eating fruit, what are you getting? Minerals. Many, if you've got 45% of your population that aren't eating any fruit, and then they're going to the store and they're trying to buy minerals. I need a mineral supplement. That's what I need. I need a mineral supplement. I'm not eating any fruit, but I got to get a mineral supplement. Are you with me? Where you get your minerals is by eating fruit. There you go. So we could eat fruit instead of sugar. What can we do for free fats? Instead of eating free fats, what can we eat more of? Eat more what? Nuts and seeds. Nuts and seeds. In your nuts and seeds, you have fats. Now, I've had people say to me, but Phil, we were looking at that cashew. You know what? The cashew is 80% fat. Oh, that's a lot of fat. Isn't it? That's a lot of fat. Well, the two things. First of all, when you put a cashew, like Eileen is going to blend up a cashew in one of her recipes to make you the cashew cream, With the cashew, you get antioxidants, you get fiber, you get vitamins, you get minerals. If she was to just put in there corn oil, what would she get? Just straight fat. No vitamins, no minerals, no antioxidants, no fiber. But when she puts the nut in, she gets the whole package. Besides that, there was a study done in California on the Californian doctors, and guess what they discovered? The doctors who ate more nuts had less heart disease. Isn't that amazing? There is in nuts an alpha-linolenic acid, a type of fat that protects your heart against heart disease. So nuts, although they're high in fat, are also good, and we do need some fat. All right. Now, the next two groups we have are meat. We have our dairy products, eggs, meat, poultry, and fish. Now, what do you think about those categories? What do you think about it? Oh, we lost our overhead projection. Sorry about that. I'll just have to wing it for now. Hopefully we get it back. But the next two categories, 15% comes from dairy products, eggs, and another 20% comes from meat, poultry, and fish. What do you think about those two categories? Anybody at all? Nothing. Careful. Be careful, Phil. Tread on thin ice here. Okay. Listen. I was driving on my way to a cooking school over in West Bank, about 40 miles from our place. And while I was driving on my way over there, I ran into I was listening to CBC. In our back country in British Columbia, the only transmission we can get is CBC in the back roads, so I'm listening to it. And on the radio, they were talking about bird flu. How many of you have heard about bird flu? Have you heard about bird flu? Yeah, of course you've heard about bird flu. And what had happened in Germany was a cat caught a bird that had bird flu and died. Now, a cat is like you and me. It's a mammal. It's a warm-blooded creature. Had caught a bird with bird flu, and it died. You know what the Germans quit doing? They quit eating chicken. Bang. That's it. No more chicken. Chicken price. Nobody wanted to buy chicken. All they had is this report. Well, it didn't take long. I mean, after a while, they saw a neighbor who went over to Kentucky Fried Chicken, and he lived, and somebody else said, oh, yeah, I was eating chicken again. He lived, and before you know it, they started buying chicken. But they got scared. And people in Canada also started getting scared. They heard that there were some farmers that were taking fish parts and feeding it to cattle to increase their protein content. The Canadians said, what? Feeding fish to cows? Why would you feed fish to cows? Do cows eat fish? Have you ever seen a cow wade out into a stream, you know, looking for a fish? No, they don't eat fish, right? Cows don't eat fish. Why don't they eat fish? When a cow eats his food, what does he do? What happens after he swallows it? What does he do after that? He burps it back up and eats it again, right? He chews it again. Can you imagine fish? You mean the first time? And then the second time, whoa. You know, like, cows do not eat fish. And Canadians said, we do not want our farmers feeding fish to cows, right? That's exactly what they said. I've had people come up to me and tell me, look, now, Phil, this is ridiculous, all this stuff about diet. I have an Aunt Minnie who, she ate 3 strips of bacon, 2 eggs. She actually drank a tumbler of rum every day. And she lived to be 97 years of age. How many of you heard of people like that? Have you heard of people like that? Of course, we've heard of all kinds of people. At 97 years old, they ate 3 strips of bacon and 2 eggs every day, and they drank a tumbler of rum. And and so how can you argue? What difference does it make what you eat? Just be happy. That's it. Just be happy. So I talked to Aunt Minnie when she was sober, you know. And she told me what she told you, but you forgot. And what was it that she told you? Do you remember? She told you that the eggs today are nothing like when I was a little girl. Isn't that what she told you? And the chicken today, oh, it's horrible. The chicken when I was a little girl was just fabulous. It was tasty. It was fantastic. Isn't that what she told you? Exactly what she told you. The food today is not like it was 30, 40 years ago. It's changed. Do you think that those people who are setting that lovely longevity that we're so proud of in Canada, you know, those Aunt Minnies who are living into their 70s and 80s, our life expectancy in Canada now is 76 years, and we are putting our chest out. We're so proud of it, right? We're proud of that. Who is it that's setting that longevity record for us? They were those people that were raised on vegetable gardens. They used to walk to school 5 miles uphill both ways, they told us about. Remember, they were the... You remember what they are? Do you think that the big gulp generation, the young people today, are going to reach 76 years of age? Honestly? We're not going to. Just think of it. In fact, the baby boomers, my generation, are slated to cut the longevity record by at least 7 years. We're going to be cutting it off by about 7 years because of the way we treated our youth and the way we treated our middle age. We'd have to put our heads in this. Well, I have somebody comes up to me finally at our guest house because they know we have worships in the morning, and they say, okay, they'll finally come up to me with a book. And they'll take the Bible and they'll say, you know what? Jesus multiplied fish. So fish are okay. And I look at them and I say, yeah. I was in New York City lecturing, and it said right on the front of the New York Times newspaper while I was there lecturing, if you're pregnant, do not eat fish caught on the eastern seaboard. It may harm your pregnancy. These fish were not caught 2,000 years ago in the Sea of Galilee. I mean, we have to realize where we're living, right? The environment that we're living in has changed. If you were to take an Eskimo human mother's breast milk and put it in a cardboard container, you would not be allowed to take it across the Alaska state line because the PCB content in it would be too high. How did we do that? In one generation, we were able to pollute this planet so much that an Eskimo mother that far away from civilization or industrialization, her breast milk has got too high a PCB level to transport it across the state line. How did we do that? Because of that, we have to think differently about the way we eat. We have to look at our diet differently, and we have to think differently. So here we go. Animals have changed. Today's meats, dairy products, and eggs are vastly different commodities of those 30 years ago. Factory farmed animals have as much as 30 times more saturated fat than yesterday's pasture-raised creatures. The products from factory farms contain residues from pesticides, hormones, growth stimulants, insecticides, tranquilizers, radioactive isotopes, herbicides, antibiotics, appetite stimulants, and larvicides. And I've had people come up to me and tell me, you know what? They spray vegetables too, right? Don't they? Exactly. They spray vegetables. I was in Washington State. I love growing food. We have gardens at Silver Hills. I love growing food, and I love to go and watch people growing it. And in Washington State, wow, you should see the vegetable gardens. They've got beautiful acres and acres of vegetable gardens. And you know what? While we were over there, I saw this cloud following a plane across the field. And I thought, I wonder what's going on. And then I realized what he's doing is he's spraying the field. Right? They're spraying the field. The difference is that when you take the vegetation and feed it to an animal, it takes 12 pounds of vegetation to make 1 pound of flesh. So whatever we're doing to the vegetation, the problem is that animals are just concentrating. It's not their fault. It's just that they're concentrating whatever we're doing. So our agriculture has become dependent upon chemicals, and those chemicals are just concentrated. All right, let's take a look at the next step. If we were to go now to the Harvard School of Medicine, and the next two slides are just about facts and figures, and we don't remember those things very well, but then we're going to go shopping, and those things we really remember, and that's what we'll do together here in a minute. This slide basically is to teach us that in 1860, if you went to the Harvard School of Medicine and looked at what people were dying of, you go into the Harvard School of Medicine, look at what people are dying of, in 1860 they had 2 cardiovascular patients a year. 2. In the Harvard School of Medicine, 2 people with heart conditions a year in the Harvard School of Medicine. Now in Canada, 50% of Canadians will die of some form of atherosclerosis. Some form of hardening of the arteries, 50% of Canadians. And I've had people say, well, you got to die of something. You know, you got to die of something, right? I mean, if you're not going to die of atherosclerosis, you're going to die of something else, right? And then I like to introduce them to a fellow. His name is Jim. Jim, I gave Jim a call. He's a fellow, a young man in our community. I gave him a call, and I asked him how he was doing, and he was trying to be upbeat. And I said, so how is the depression, Jim? And he started to cry. I said, you better come out to the guest house. Let's see what we can do to help you. Jim was 43 years of age. He had a massive stroke all down one side of his body. He had a wife with 3 children. He had a business. He had a farm. He had to sell his farm. He had to sell his business. His wife finally couldn't live with him any longer. He was so altered by the stroke, she couldn't live with him any longer. He lost his marriage. Jim went through what I call hell. When people tell me you got to die of something, for Jim it would have almost been merciful if he had died that day rather than continuing to live. And that's when we talk about 50% of Canadians are suffering from some form of atherosclerosis. This means that if they decide they want to go to Hawaii or go across the border or whatever it is like that, they got to pay astronomical amounts of money to be out of the province just for a day or two or a week. It's just amazing. It affects their entire lives. In 1860, two a year. Today, 50% of our population. We've done something, right? We've changed the way we eat. And what happened in 1860? What was the staff of life? What was considered the staff of life in 1860? Does anybody know? Bread. We were eating grain. We're eating 300 pounds of grain per person per year. How many of you have eaten Silver Hills bread? Oh, look at that. I mean, isn't that wonderful? We don't own anything in Silver Hills bread anymore, but I just like to ask. If you were to eat 3/4 of a loaf of Silver Hills bread every day, what else would you eat? I'm talking about 3/4 of a loaf of Silver Hills bread every day. What else would you eat? Nothing. That's what every American and Canadian was doing in 1860. We were eating 3/4 of a loaf of Silver Hills bread every day. 300 pounds of grain per person per day. You with me? That was the staff of life. We were eating twice as many potatoes. Now we're eating 3 times as much chicken. We're eating twice as much dairy. We're eating so much. We've increased our animal consumption and we've decreased our plant consumption. We went from a plant-based diet to an animal-based diet in that intervening time. And as a result of that, the animals, they store up the extra carbohydrates as fat. Any extra carbohydrates they eat, they store it as fat. And when we eat it, instead of getting the carbohydrates, we get fat. There's where the problem is. All right, if we take a look at 1980, you can see that we doubled our intake of fat over 1860, and we halved our complex carbohydrates. That's exactly what happened. And we doubled our sugar. All right, if we wanted to do an ideal diet, then let's just take, we've got a whole bunch of figures here. And I don't want to go through the first two, basically to say that the National Academy of Science said that we're all dying with such a high-fat diet. And so they reduced our fat intake to 30%. If you were to reduce your intake from 45% of your calories as fat down to 30, you would still have to be taking your angina medication. You would still have to be taking the different heart medications that the doctor has. It wouldn't be therapeutic enough. Along came a renegade. His name was Nathan Pritikin. Some of you can remember him from the 70s. And he put people on what they called the 10-10-80 diet. 10% fat, 10% protein, 80% complex carbohydrates. He was able to reverse heart disease with this diet. He had 60 Minutes did a special. They went into this guy's house. He had a two-story house. And he had a for sale sign on the front yard. He had angina. Walking up the set of steps was just too much for him. He couldn't even live in a two-story house. He had his wife, when they went into the house, she had the life insurance policy laid on the table in full view, paid up to date, right? Her husband's at risk. He's got angina. He couldn't even carry his own suitcases into the car when he left to go to the longevity center. He went to Santa Barbara to the longevity center for a month. And he came back, and when he came back, 60 Minutes pans the car pulling up to the sidewalk. He gets out of the car. He bounds up the stairs two at a time. He grabs his honey and spins her around the middle of the room. Obviously, there was a change. He's been away. He's been on a month lifestyle change where he's eaten 80% of his calories as complex carbohydrates. This is a change that happened. Where did Nathan Pritikin get that diet? Do you have any idea? Nathan Pritikin was an electrical engineer. He wasn't even a nutritionist. Have you any idea where he got that diet? 10-10-80. He did. He studied cultures throughout the world. And the cultures that he studied were in rural Philippines, rural China, rural Africa, places where there's no heart disease. And he said, well, why don't we just eat where they have no heart disease? Why don't we eat like them and see what happens? So he fed his guests like you would eat if you were in the rural Philippines or the rural Africa or rural South America or something like that. He fed his clients like that, and their heart disease went away. Well, he didn't get a lot of credit for it. There was another fellow. His name was Dr. Dean Ornish. He wrote the book Reversing Heart Disease. He was a doctor. And he got it published, and he showed, yes, you can actually reverse this disease by changing your lifestyle. All right, now we're going to go shopping. The ideal diet, the one we're going to recommend to you, the one that you can't see on the board there right now because we're having trouble with the technical difficulty. If you were to sit at the back of the class, you'd be able to see it because they can see it back there. Anyway, if you've got a pen, write it down. If you've got a good memory, remember it. And well, then we're going to go shopping because you've got the shopping list in your hand right now. So here's the figure. We're going to say the ideal diet would be 70% complex carbohydrates, 10% protein, and 20% fat. Are you with me? So we're going to go 70% complex carbohydrates, 10% protein, and 20% fat. The reason why we increase the fat a little more than what Nathan Pritikin did is because we have found in working with people over 30 years that if we restrict your diet to the extreme, that you will stay on it for the length of time that you have to, and the minute that you can go off of it, what are you going to do? You're going to go and get something good to eat. Very rarely is that something good broccoli. It's just very rarely. I've never seen anybody leave the guest house, drive to town to get themselves a plate of broccoli. It doesn't seem that way. You see, we found with people, if you restrain their diet to the extreme, then they eventually kick that diet right out. What we would rather, we call ourselves a lifestyle center, we would rather change your lifestyle. That is why what I emphasize to you is exercise, the very, very importance of exercise. The beauty of exercise is the more you exercise, the more stretch you can have in your diet. The less you exercise, the more strict you have to become with your diet. Are you with me? So when you get really, if you really want to quit exercising, then you got to get really strict with yourself. But if you are willing to exercise, then you got more stretch in your diet, and you allow yourself more freedom and more liberty. And what we're recommending to you here now is 20% of your calories is fat. All right, let's go shopping. Take your shopping list. You've got it. The last sheet, the one with all the figures on it, all the foods. All right. On the left-hand corner, we've got meat and poultry. Let's do hamburger, second one on the list. Hamburger, lean, raw. What percentage of it is protein? What does your list say? What's it say? 50% protein. What is the percentage of fat? 50%. What's the percentage of complex carbohydrate? What does it say? Zero. What are we shooting for? What are we trying to reach for complex carbohydrate? 70%. So hamburger is really lacking in that carbohydrate department. Let's go down to the choice broiled sirloin steak. What is the protein content of choice broiled sirloin steak? What does your list say? 25%, doesn't it? What's the percentage of fat? 75%. How much carbohydrate? You know, Eileen and I have done cooking schools all across British Columbia. And invariably, at the end of a cooking class, we've fed them, we've royally spoiled them and given them delicious food to eat, and people have loved every minute of it. But somebody will invariably come up to me and whisper in my ear, not publicly, they'll say to me, "Where is the protein dish?" If I was to have served sirloin steak, what would they have said? "There is the protein dish." How much fat? 75. I had to eat 75% of my calories as fat to get 25% of my calories as protein. Are you with me? See what's going on here? See the problem that we're dealing with? We're having to get a lot of fat to get a very small amount of protein. All right, let's carry on. I'm going to show you where you can get it even cheaper. Let's go to pork. Pork is how much protein? 29%. How much fat? How much carbohydrate? Zero. How about an egg, poached egg? How much protein? Second one on the eggs and dairy. 34% protein. How much fat in an egg? Did you know that an egg was 64% fat? I didn't. When my wife and I first got married, I'd tell her Sunday morning, "You stay in bed, honey. I'm good at making breakfast." I'd take three eggs, crack them into a pan. I could whip up an omelet. I want to make this a nice omelet. I chop in some peppers, and I would throw in some cheddar cheese. I'm going to give it some fat. I didn't know an egg was 64%. I didn't need to help an egg. An egg is fat enough. I thought I had to fatten it up. Let's go down to cheddar cheese. 27% protein. How much fat? 71% fat. Are you with me? These are where our fats are coming from. Now let's go down to grains. And I'm going to just go over to the right-hand column with the grains. I don't want to go through all the figures. Just look at your grains, barley all the way to wheat. Look at your carbohydrates, 89, 82, 83, 72, 89, 79, 82, all high in complex carbohydrates. Let's do the same thing with fruit. Everything in the fruit except for avocado, everything in the fruit column, you see on the right-hand side, look at all the carbohydrates, 90s, 90s, 94, 85, high in complex carbohydrate. And then take a look at your vegetables, asparagus all the way to water chestnuts, same thing. All high in complex carbohydrates. If I really wanted to get 70% of my calories from complex carbohydrates, what three foods would I eat largely? Not exclusively, but largely. What would be my three foods? Grains, fruits, and vegetables, right? That's what I would largely eat. That's where I would get most of my food. Now, somebody here is going to say, what about protein? The Canadian government recommends that you get 8% of your calories from protein. I put down 10% here. But the Canadian government, not Silver Hills, your government, Canada's government, recommends that you get 8% of your calories from protein. Take a look at asparagus. How much of it's protein? What does it say? What does your list say? Asparagus is how much protein? 24. How many times more than what is recommended by the Canadian government? Three times, right? Take a look at beets. How much protein is there in beets? 10%. They recommend 8. Look at broccoli. How much protein is there in broccoli? 28. How much was there in sirloin steak, by the way? 25. What is there in broccoli? 28. Where does the cow get protein, by the way? He eats plants. You know, you can eat plants. If you eat plants, you get protein. Broccoli's got 28. Look at cabbage. Let's take a look at cabbage. What if we ate just cabbage, what would we get? 13% of our calories is. If you ate just cabbage, would you get enough protein? Yes. You'd have the house to yourself, too, right? Dr. John McDougall says if you eat a variety of grains, fruits, and vegetables, it is not possible to produce a protein poor diet. Are you with me? If you eat a variety of grains, fruits, and vegetables, it's not possible to come up with a protein-poor diet. This idea that we're trying to eat a protein dish, that's old school. That came from a mistake that we made in the 50s because we decided to study rats instead of humans. That's exactly what it came from. And we're now, the Canadian government, I'm going to show you now, the Canadian government is trying to retrace its steps on this problem. Let's take a look. Here's what's happened. Oh, we've been through this. There you have. Have you seen that before? What is that? This is your four food groups. This was produced in 1977. This is the Canadian government, stamped by Canada, right on the bottom of it. If you read this in the text material, it actually warns you about being a vegetarian. You should be careful. That's what it does. This book actually warns you about it. It's pretty scary. All right? That's 1977. The four food groups, of course, were on the top was meat, dairy products, bottom was fruits and vegetables, and grains. This was the four food groups. And the theory was you were supposed to be eating equally. Remember, see this? There were equal portions. If you ate more fruit, then you had to eat more grain, more dairy products, and more meat. That was the way it was set up. In 1977, that was 1977. 1995, your government and my government changed that to what they called the Rainbow Food Guide. And when you look at the Rainbow Food Guide, what does it say? It, on the outside, the largest portion of our meal should be from grains. The next portion should be what? Fruits and vegetables. When we went over our shopping trip right here, what did we come up with? We should eat largely what? Fruits, grains, and vegetables. Just by looking at these figures, we ourselves came up with exactly the same conclusion that the Canadian government said we should eat largely grains, fruits, and vegetables. Small amount of dairy and 3 ounces of meat maximum per day. And then it says in the subtext underneath that, peas, beans, and lentils more often. Isn't that amazing? That's right in your right. That's the Canadian government. Now, if you decided to do that, I go around the community and I say, well, you know, if we actually decided to listen to our government, that would be the first time. But supposing we actually decided to follow their recommendation, and you're going to eat largely grain, you're going to invite your friends over for supper. Come on over tomorrow night, we're having oatmeal. See the problem? The Canadian government makes the recommendation, but how do we carry it out? That's why we run cooking schools to make cookbooks and try to expand people's thinking and all the rest of it, because you don't want to just put grain in front of people. You want to give it some flavor and taste and add something to it and make it taste good so they enjoy it. Make it into a loaf or a patty or something like that. You know, when we get to this part of the lecture, people get tired and they start thinking, okay, I've got the point. And a lot of times I have people that will say, you know, from now on we're going to skin the chicken. We're going to eat fish instead of steak. We're going to eat light ice cream. We're going to eat light cheeses. You know, we're going to get the one that's the low-fat version, and we're going to stop eating all that fat. And is that really what we're saying? Is that really the story or the message? And this is what Dr. Campbell, who wrote the China study, said. He put it this way. You see, in plants, the plant kingdom has in it things that we're just discovering that protect your body against things like heart disease and cancer. They actually give you the biochemical pathways to get rid of certain chemicals and certain poisons that have gotten into our system. They give you that biochemical pathway to get rid of those things. The same plants give the animal the biochemical pathway to get rid of those poisons. So that cow that's sitting there eating beside the freeway when the cars are going by spewing out benzene, as long as he keeps eating that grass, the grass is giving him the biochemical pathway to get rid of that benzene. The problem is that if I eat the cow, the plant properties that were helping him don't help me. I have to eat the plant. So he says, we need, in the society we live in today, we need to look at our plate and ask ourselves the question, how many plants do I need to consume every day to help my body live in the environment that I'm living in? Do you get the point? How many plants? How many plants should I be consuming? It's not exchanging one low-fat animal product for a high-fat animal product, but it's exchanging one animal product for a plant product. Here's what Michael Pullen said. I could have said this to start with. You know what he said? He was looking at nutrition all over the world, and he said, you know what? We should eat food, not too much, mostly plants. Isn't that simple? He said, we should eat food, not too much, mostly plants. Okay, Eileen is going to show you some ideas here for light meals now.
Are you ready? Are you saying anything? No? Okay. Well, good morning. This is one of my favorite subjects, and it's called light lunches or light meals. And here's some of the things that's in the cookbook. But I have so much fun with my grandkids and with my bigger kids making things like this. My son lives on right at Silver Hills with his wife and two kids, and his wife, who I like better than my son, Heidi, she's in charge of the spa. And her and I, before they got married, we were best of friends, so I kind of are so happy when they got married, because then I got to keep Heidi forever and ever. And I like my son, but I really don't like talking about tractors and mechanics and, you know, I mean, that's not like fun, like shopping and, you know, that kind of stuff. Phil and him can talk. I like to talk to Heidi, but we have so much fun because they'll phone up and say, hey, you want to come to our house and have, where I've got the barbecue going and we're going to have grilled, what are those things called on the stick? Shish kebabs. Or we'll say, hey, you want to have bruschetta tonight? And we have so much fun. And you guys can have fun with your kids too. You don't have, it doesn't have to be boring. It can be lots and lots of fun. And so I really like these kind of meals because they're light, they're not heavy, and they're easy to make. And so today I want to talk about, first of all, what's the first one I'm talking about? The spinach wrap. Okay, this can be changed any way your little heart desires, but it calls for, first of all, you have to have a cream sauce or cream spread that goes inside the spinach wrap. And it calls for your tortilla wraps, and it calls for your cream cheese that looks like this. You can make your own. Remember we talked about, you know, if you will so choose, you can make your own. But I don't. So here you put a little bit of that into your bowl. This is a little bit funny now because my freezer, it froze it. So it's not quite what it's supposed to be, but anyways, there you go. Then it calls for a little bit of sour cream. And I really like this sour cream. I make my tzatziki with this. I use it for my pierogies and all sorts of good things. I like this. So there you go. You put a little bit of that in. And I never look at the recipe, so I just put in what I think. And then at the very end, you put in a little bit of mayonnaise, and that will make your spread. Stir that up. And then I think it calls for, what did you put in there? Garlic? Oh, then you put in seasoning. And I've got a little bit of garlic plus, or you can put John's seasoning, or roasted red pepper. And then it calls for relish, and that gives it the bite. You know, when I was a kid, my mother was a school teacher. She was a school teacher, and we used to have to make lunches. We all went at the same time. We drove together at the same time. And I had to do the dishes. Seems like all my life I had to do the dishes. Anyways, I said to my mom one time, man, you're lucky. You just have to make lunches, and I have to do the dishes all every night. And she said, we're trading. We are. And I started making lunches. Well, my mother had a reputation of making the best lunches in the world. In fact, when I went to school, my kids would beg me to trade my lunch with their peanut butter sandwich. My mother would grind up the chicken and make chicken salad sandwiches, and oh, it was so good. So I had to do that. Well, within a week, I begged her to switch jobs because it took time. It took thinking. And so what we do, you know, is very important. If we just slap it together and it doesn't matter, we won't enjoy eating. And God has meant for us to enjoy what we're doing. And so when you add a little bit of the dressings and that, like the salad dressings, it's going to be like your salad dressings or your, like my mother's chicken salad sandwich. This is going to kind of be kind of like it, because when I cook, I think, okay, my mom used to do this. Well, I could do that in the vegetarian thing, and that's how my brain works. So I'm going to put a little bit of sweet relish. I'm going to put a little bit of the other kind of relish, the hamburger relish, and mix it up. You can put in green onions, whatever you want. If you've got your own homemade stuff, fantastic. Oh, wow, you guys are lucky. Okay, there you go. smell it. Ah, oh, yeah, that's so good. Then you get your quesadilla. And today I'm going to use the spinach one because everything I'm doing is green. So, my outfit doesn't match the headband today. Thank you. Is that better? Pretty soon I'll get an elastic band and tie it around there, you know, and look real cool. Okay, so what you do then, it says, is you cut the tips off. I guess that's to make it look nicer, square. And then you spread that on. Oh boy, this is going to be good. Like so. And I don't want to pick it up, but, you know, kind of like that. And then you put on peppers. Sorry, I forgot it in my little bag here. I really forgot it in my little bag. Where did I stick it? No, that's the wrong thing. It's all by itself. Hmm. Oh, well. We'll put a little bit of this. sure. Okay, then you put the peppers. I need some of this for another recipe, so I'm just going to put a little bit. You can put yellow peppers on there, green onions, whatever you so choose. And then it calls for a soya chicken. This is the Ives soya chicken that I'm using here. So that's right there. And anytime you use any of these products, if you just take it out of the package and spread it on, it's gross. Ugh. It's really gross. So what you have to do is doctor it up. So you saute a little bit of onions with a little bit of peppers, and then you put that in, add some of that famous chicken seasoning, a little bit of John seasonings or chicken or garlic plus, and that's what you can put on there. So we're going to spread some of that on there. And I'm not doing a good job of this, I mean, because I get nervous up here. I'm not paying you, Steve. Oh, thank you. And then you have to use your imagination. You could put asparagus in there. You could put anything your little heart desires. And you have to pretend this is spinach. I didn't want to buy a whole big package for $5 just for one little thing. So you stick that in there like so. And you'd roll it tight. Now it would have a lot more of vegetables in here. And then you cut it up and you serve it. And it's really yummy. Excellent for sandwiches for your kids. It tastes really, really good. Another thing you can do with this, like I said, you can put in blanched or parboiled asparagus in here. You can put anything your little heart desires. So that is one of the things that you can do for a quick lunch, and it's really, really good. Another thing I wanted to talk about this while I'm at it is everybody likes chili, right? I love making chili. Do you like making chili? Oh, isn't it fun? You get your peppers and your onions and your garlic, and then you get all that tomatoey stuff, and then the beans. And for my hamburger, I use this Ives stuff. If you use this and just eat it by but in chili, it's really, really good. And always make chili a day or two ahead, obviously, because the tomato sauce has to sit and marinate and all the rest of it. Oh, it's yummy. Well, you can put it in, you can make, I make sometimes potato lefse to go with it, so we wrap that up. But another thing that you can do with this is make your own patil or taco salad. Right. And what you do is you lightly oil this, very lightly. And then you cut out little circles like so. And then you've got one of these little things. Then you take a muffin pan, and it's the normal size muffin pan, and you stick it in like so, and you make little taco salads. Now, this one's too little, but there you go. Bake it at 375 for about 8 to 10 minutes till it turns crispy and golden brown, and it is so yummy. I love it. Now, you can buy the big taco salad things. You know, they're about this big. I'm sure you all have seen them in the stores. But for me, if somebody gives me a taco salad that big and I'm supposed to fill it and then I'm supposed to eat it, do you know what happens to me? I can't eat. Because all of a sudden, I have to eat all that and I can't. And so my whole digestion stops and I can't eat. I've gone to town, I've gone to restaurants and I've ordered something and they bring me this huge plate they have to roll in, you know, and they plunk it in front of me. And Phil looks at me, and I look at Phil, and I tears start coming. I can't eat anymore. Oh, no, here she goes again, you know. But I just can't. It just does something to me. So, that's why I like little ones, because if I want one or I want two, fantastic. But if I want one big honking one, no way. Even if I eat the same amount, I can't do it. It has to be little things on my plate. Just like, you know, little spanakopita or little things. It has to be just like that. What am I going to do with all this stuff? Throw it out? Feed it to the chickens? How many have chickens? Nobody has chickens. So what are you going to do with it? Put it on a baking sheet, bake it at 375, and you got your own homemade taco shells. Excellent. Oh, choco chips. Excellent. Oh, I just love them. And you don't waste a thing. So that to me is really, really special. The next thing I want to show you is... Oh, dear. Yeah. Do you see my shell? No. Where's my shell? I had a veggie pizza somewhere here. Aha! I'm not as retarded as I look. Okay. I'd like you to know, if you're dumb when you're vegetarian, you're just the same way. You know, you're still going to be the same. So, here's my shell, what do you call this? Veg pizza shell. You can either make it with the quick pizza recipe in the cookbook, or you can buy a Phil's Perry crescent roll, multigrain, and pat it all on a pan and make it. And it's faster, and if you're in a hurry, if you're having a big party, it can make it a lot easier. And so you bake it like so, and then you get... Yeah, you have to let it cool. What you do is you make a mixture. Have you got that on there? And you spread it on, except you don't put the relish on there. But I'm just going to pretend this doesn't have relish because you guys can't see anyways. And it wouldn't be as runny as this. It would be thicker, like a spread, but like the cream cheese in that. And then you get to doctor it up. And it's so much fun. That one. Oh, this one. It's okay. You start putting on little broccolis. Oh, it's so pretty. Little broccolis. Little peppers. Little carrots. Usually I shred my carrots, but I didn't have one at today, so I just made my baby carrots into really, really tiny little things. And then I put in a little bit of peppers. Is that olives? The black ones are olives. What do you know? So that's what your veggie pizza is going to look like. Similar to that. You can put all sorts of colored things. Cut it up and serve it like about sizes like this. And oh, it's yummy. The recipe, original recipe, calls for fresh garlic. I put in roasted garlic. And I like that way better. Remember I told you I didn't like raw garlic. But some people really do. And it really, really tastes good. So those are some of the things that you can do for your light lunches and all the rest of it. The next thing I want to show you or talk about is tofu. I should start a company with tofu because I use quite a bit of it. But every time I go to the store and put it in my cart and I'm rolling down the high on the thing and I get to the cash register and someone says, "Tofu, I tried that. That's terrible." They're right. It's terrible. We went to Japan to do a lecture series, and someone took us to an authentic Japanese dinner, and they gave us this tofu soup, and it tasted like white tofu sponges floating around in the water with a little bit of green stuff, and it didn't have any flavor at all. Tofu has no flavor, and so if you don't season it or marinate it, you're not going to enjoy it. If you know how to use it, you're going to enjoy it. My favorite kind of tofu is the sunrise medium firm tofu. I always rinse it, and then I soak it on paper towels overnight to get the excess water out. See how much water is in there? That I just did last night. And if that's in your product, it's going to make it a lot, lot harder to use. This tofu, you can use the firm tofu as well. And I get that organic tofu from Costco. But for some things, that's good. But for the majority of things, I like to use this the best. One of the things that we really like in the tofu is our cottage cheese. Now, I'm sure some of you really enjoy cottage cheese. Well, you can make cottage cheese that really tastes good out of tofu. You, again, soak that overnight so you get rid of the excess moisture. You crumble it up, and then you make a dressing or a marinade that will go in there to make it taste good. And what you do is you blend your cashews with pickle juice, a little bit of lemon juice, and salt, and whatever else you want to do, but that's the main ingredients, and chopped up fresh dill. You put that all in there, and you marinate that overnight, or at least for several hours, and it's so good. I make a rye bread that's really yummy. In the summertime, we put it on the rye bread with big slabs of tomato from the garden. Oh, there's nothing nicer than that to eat. And so that's one way to marinate tofu.
We have a lady that
came to the guest house to work with us. Her favorite on baked potatoes, on, like Irene says, rye bread, was cottage cheese. She loved it on everything. And she said, "The hardest thing for me to do is to give up cottage cheese. I'm not going to be able to, coming to the guest house." She ate this that Irene is telling you about, and she said, "I like it better." She likes it better than cottage cheese. She loves it. So it's not like you're making something and apologizing for it. The same thing goes with the cashew cream. We had a gentleman that came to our place that owned the Italian restaurant in Vernon. He came as a health guest to the guest house. And he said the cashew cream, the Alfredo sauce that Eileen made out of her cashew cream, was better by far than anything he'd ever produced in his restaurant. He says, "I will be producing this cashew cream as my Alfredo for my spaghetti. So sometimes we think, oh boy, I got to give up so many things. Not at all. If you once you learn to combine the flavors and the taste and get the textures right, you're not giving anything up. You're getting something that's just making your food gourmet. And that's what this cottage cheese ends up being like.
With this organic tofu, my fridge is frozen. But what I do here is I open this up and I slice it very thin. And then I get a marinating sauce you can get for Asian, which would be like sesame oil and soy sauce and maybe black bean sauce. And you marinate it overnight and then you brown it. And that's yummy to put in stir fries, that kind of thing. Then you can get like a East Indian type sauce, and all the recipes are in the cookbook, and you can marinate these overnight or at least for a couple of hours, brown them, and then put them in the product that you want. And I really enjoy that as well. So there's lots of things you can do with tofu, but you have to remember that you have to season it, you have to marinate it, and give it some kind of flavor and taste. Okay, now my husband he's a bruschetta man, and he's going to show you how to make bruschetta. You want to move this?
How many of you have had a bruschetta? Anybody here had a bruschetta? Hands up high. Okay, how many of you had a bruschetta you didn't like? No? Every bruschetta you've ever... Yeah, okay, what was wrong with it? What was wrong with your bruschetta? You didn't make it. That was the only thing you didn't like about it? Okay. Anybody else had a bruschetta you didn't care for? What flavors are you expecting when you have a bruschetta? Garlic? You want some garlic. Anything else? Tomato, of course. What else do you want? Olive oil? Okay. Anything else? Cilantro? Okay. Anything else? Parsley? Okay. So, there's some problems that come with a bruschetta. I'll tell you, because Eileen claims that I would like to be Italian, I like to eat Italian food. I don't want to be Italian. But anyway, whenever I go somewhere, I order the bruschetta. I went. My wife's brother-in-law was the head of the chef department at Northern Alberta Institute of Technology, right up the road up here in Edmonton. He was the head of the chef department and the food service. He knew I liked Italian food, and he took me out to an Italian restaurant in Edmonton that was in a house. I mean, this was a special, you know, like you're being invited right into the person's home. Oh, this is the stuff. This is what I want. And they gave me a bruschetta that was on a McDonald's white bun, and they used canned tomatoes. And I was like, what did you do to me? I thought, oh, this is supposed to be special. Anyway, the rest of it was great. I don't know why they did that. When do you serve the bruschetta? What time of the meal? What part of the meal? What's it called? The aperitif, right? It's the beginning. It's what you judge the meal by. If somebody gives you a lousy appetizer, what do you want to do? Cancel the entree. I'm out of here. Forget it. The way Eileen will tell you over and over again, the presentation of your food is absolutely important. We do not eat with our mouth. We eat with our mind. We eat with our eyes. Its presentation is very, very important. So when you're making and laying out your food, think about that. The problem with the bruschetta is, the number one problem you have to deal with is you've got a wet product, a wet tomato, that you're putting on a piece of bread, right? It doesn't matter what kind of bread you use, it's still going to be the wet tomato on the bread. The bread is going to absorb the moisture and it's going to start getting soggy. To avoid that, what I do is I take my bread, I'm using a piece of what's called Winnipeg rye. This is the Winnipeg rye. You can use whatever bread you want. I would take this and I'll put it in the oven under broil. And I'll broil the surface, just the top of this, just till it's toasted. I don't want it to start turning brown. I want to dry it out, just the surface. Now I've hardened it. All right. Now I want to have garlic in my bruschetta. I also want to have onion. And this is the fun part about cooking. This is where it gets to be fun. Because now what I'm going to do is I'm going to layer it so that when I put it together, your mouth is going to take it apart. You're going to get the flavors individually. So I'm going to make a garlic butter. And you can make a garlic butter simply by using a product called Earth Balance. Or you can, and roasted garlic. You can make roasted garlic. If you don't have the time, though, I could take Earth Balance and Garlic Plus, which is a dried garlic seasoning that you can buy from Costco or anywhere else where they sell Clubhouse seasonings, garlic plus and earth balance, and I paint that on my bread once it's been cooled. I don't want it to get soggy and soft again, so I'm going to wait till the bread is cooled, then I'm going to put on there the garlic butter. Now I've got that. The next thing is the tomato. When I take the tomato, and I cut it, take the tomato, the stems here and the bottoms here, and I cut it this way, open it up, and I seed it. That means I just take all the fleshy, wet seed stuff out, dump it out, get rid of it. Then I cut up the tomato. Now, some people say, why don't you use a paste tomato? Because I've never eaten a paste tomato that I want to eat another one. You know, I mean, I've never had one where I sat down, oh, wow. I mean, it's just a paste tomato, right? They don't have, to me, a lot of flavor. So you want a nice tomato, seed it, take out the seeds, chop it up. And then I want to put with it onion. Now, here's where it's critical. I've had some bruschettas that tasted like an onion sandwich. All I could taste at the end of the bruschetta was onion. Why didn't I just buy an onion? It would have been cheaper, right? I wouldn't have had to go through all that work. You spoil it, in other words. You see what I'm saying? So what you can do is I take the onion, and all these guys that are selling you sweet onions claim that their onions are the sweetest in the world. And we cut them up, and you're crying in the kitchen, and you're going like, I don't know, that doesn't seem too sweet. If you want to make sure that it's really sweet, very seldom they are. If they're not, cut up a very small amount of it, put it in olive oil, put the sweet, if you want to use honey, you want to use organic cane sugar or whatever, put a little sweetener with it, let it marinate, sweeten that onion up a bit. If you really want to be safe, use green onion, because green onion doesn't have that sharpness to it, and chop green onion in there. So now you've got your onion. If your onion is sharp, just use 2 pieces per slice. That's all it takes. Now we want a twinkle. And when you're making a twinkle, I always ask, you know, what people ask me, what are you talking about? When you make a recipe, even if you take our cookbook, make it your own. Make a twinkle out of it. Make something that's special, something you would like. For me, the twinkle with my bruschetta is the olive I use. I put an olive in there, and I use the Kalamata olive, which is the Greek olive. And I chop that up and put that in there, and all of a sudden it twinkles. It comes right alive. It's twinkling. Eileen is doing it while I'm talking. She's got the olive. Now that I need to have something that will hold this together, and I'm going to put on there, we've got the soy cheddar. I put that on there to hold it together. Now, soy cheese is not a health food. Okay? And that's as simple as it is. It's not a health food. I don't claim it is. It does keep the tomato from falling off the bread, though. So I'm going to put a little bit on there. Fortunately, they have not made it so that it tastes that great, so that you want to eat as much of it as you used to eat cheese, right? So fortunately, you can use it sparingly here and there, and it will help to trick your palate into thinking you're actually eating cheese when you're not. But anyway, so I use a little bit. I put a bit of soy, and then I put a little of the Parmesan, the white Parmesan on there, because it actually does have a good flavor. And I put that on top of the thing and pop it back in the oven.
Oh, you forgot it. One thing.
What's this?
You forgot something.
I forgot one thing, the most important thing. What did I forget? Help me out. Who did I forget? The most important part of the tomato. It has to go with tomato. Tomato and basil. Exactly. Thank you. She put the basil on there for me. There you go. That's what it looks like. I wish I had a way to broil it, have it give each one of you a piece of it right now. You would absolutely love this. If you put this out as an aperitif at your meal, you don't even have to feed them the rest of the meal. They'll just love this right here. See that? I like to serve this with a minestrone soup. I make a minestrone soup and serve this together with minestrone, and you've got a fabulous lunch. The reason why I tell it to you this way is because, number one, cooking is a very creative thing. It's one of the most creative things that you do. It's one of the most important things that you do. The fact is, one author said it this way. Being a good cook is equivalent to what? 10 talents. You know, we talk about having talents and how it's important to have talents. A lot of the work that we do at the guest house, helping people get well, has to do with the fact that we're living in a society where it's very easy to get yourself sick eating the wrong foods. If you have a cook that knows how to put it together and make it tasty and delicious and healthful at the same time, that's worth 10 talents. Okay? So get into the creativity of it. Learn to experiment. Learn to practice. Learn to think about how to put those foods together and how you layer it. How do you put the different flavors together? It's exciting. We've enjoyed being with you. I know we've made you hungry. It's time for you to go and have lunch. Well, we'll tomorrow we're going to have another good season. I think Eileen is even going to be talking to you about desserts tomorrow. There you go. Oh, let's have a word of prayer before we go. Loving Heavenly Father, we want to thank you for this camp meeting. We most of all want to thank you for these individuals who are interested in taking care of their health, learning how to take care of themselves. And Lord, as we think of all the plants that you've given to us, all the variety of flavors and tastes and textures and the things that your hands have made, we thank you, Lord. You're our creator. You've made us.